good horse, I called you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune, to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're listening to Unwelcome Guests on WEOS Geneva and WXXE Fenner Syracuse. I'm Chris Sturr. Today, we will hear several speeches given at a rally held earlier this month for Ralph Nader, presidential candidate for the Green Party. Over 12,000 supporters attended the rally, which was held at the arena formerly known as the Boston Garden, now known as the Fleet Center, named after Fleet Bank. In our first hour, we'll hear a rousing speech by one of the local speakers at the rally, union member and activist Pete Capanna. Then, we'll hear from historian Howard Zinn, the Green Party vice presidential candidate Winona LaDuke, and filmmaker and funny man Michael Moore. Those three speakers were introduced by TV personality Phil Donahue. In our second hour, we'll hear Nader's speech at the Boston rally, which was held on the eve of the first presidential debates, from which Nader was excluded by the Presidential Commission on Debates, which is controlled by the two major parties.
I'm here today because I believe that Ralph Nader is the only candidate talking about real solutions to problems facing working people today. Real solutions. Like a $10 an hour minimum wage. Like universal health care. Like renegotiating trade agreements to protect the rights of all workers. Like repealing Taft-Hartley and the right to organize a union. Since the passage of Taft-Hartley, we have seen union membership decline to the point where we, in the unionized manufacturing sector, are now an endangered species. And when we try to organize for living wages, health care, and a voice in the workplace, we are harassed, intimidated, and often fired. Ralph Nader is the one candidate who knows that with the passage of Taft-Hartley and the resulting decline in labor's power came the growing divide between the few who are doing just fine and all the rest of us who are working hard to keep those few doing fine. Ralph Nader knows that in this new economy, not everyone is benefiting. Millions of Americans are working, but they're just not making it. We don't need statistics to show us. All we really need to do is look around. People are working two or three jobs, part-time, temporary work with no health care. That's no way to raise a family. We are all here together today to forge an alliance. A blue-green alliance of workers, environmentalists, the student movement, the gay rights movement, people of color, seniors. We need to get the message out. We need to have a conversation about Ralph Nader with our family, our friends and neighbors. Run some phone banks and get out the vote. Those other two wouldn't touch these issues with a 10-foot pole. That's why they won't let Ralph in the debates. Today is a call to action to send a message to the two major political parties that we intend to be there together on Election Day. Together for Ralph Nader. All of us here together for Ralph Nader. Together for Ralph Nader. Together for Ralph Nader. Together for Ralph Nader! Together for Ralph Nader! Together for Ralph Nader! Students! Environmentalists! People of color! Together! Corbyn, Labour. We are here together for Ralph Nader. Because a vote for Nader is a vote for ourselves. And now I am pleased to present the Professor Emeritus at Boston University, a man of conscience, a man who wrote the Bible, a man who has devoted his adult life to trying to encourage America to reach out rather than lash out. He is responsible for the people's history of the United States. He is Howard Zinn. Thank you very much. Can you all hear me?
Yes!
Well, Phil Donahue told me that this is wired for rock stars, which means you can hear everything. Well, it's great to see this crowd. Just really wonderful. I know all the arguments for the lesser evil. No, but I also know that when you keep supporting the lesser evil, you end up only with evil, you see. And they can give me all those arguments they want about the lesser evil, about being realistic, about being practical, but I refuse to surrender my conscience to the moneyed interests that run this campaign. Have you noticed that our political leaders and the press are watching places all over the world to see if they have free elections? Really? They're watching Peru, they're watching Yugoslavia, they're watching Indonesia, they're lamenting the lack of free elections in Cuba. But they're not watching us, you see. And the question is, yeah, it seems to me an election where a candidate needs $150 million or $200 million to run for president is not a free election. See? We should have monitors from some international agency to come here and check up on our election. And an election that excludes important candidates is not a democratic election. And we know why they're keeping Ralph Nader out of this election, because he has a fatal flaw. He tells the truth. Democracy requires a free marketplace of ideas, and we are here today to keep the spirit of democracy alive. There was an amusing moment in this unamusing campaign, and that was when Bush accused Gore of stirring up class warfare. Well, we have had class warfare in this country for a very long time. Not between the Democratic and Republican parties,
but a war waged by both parties against the vast majority of the American people. That class war began a long time ago with the first European settlements on this continent, with wealthy landowners on one side and indentured white servants and black slaves on the other. And then when the rich merchants of Boston sent an army to put down a rebellion of farmers in western Massachusetts, and when the wealthy white men known as our founding fathers fashioned a government designed to prevent rebellion and to maintain control of the country by slave owners, merchants, manufacturers, and Indian killers. That was class warfare. Yeah. And that went on. That went on through all of our history as the government in the hands of the rich gave huge grants of land to the railroads and depletion allowances to the oil companies and tariffs for the manufacturers, yes, corporate welfare. We have had class warfare every time the army and the National Guard and the police were called out to attack working people who went out on strike. And when the leaders of government sent our young men to war, that was class warfare, because the soldiers were mostly poor, and those killed in these wars were disproportionately people of color. Eugene Debs. Also ran for president. A third party ticket. His name remains alive. And a lot of people who ran for president on the major party tickets, we can't even recognize their names. But Eugene Debs, during World War I, protested the war, and he said, "It's the master class that makes the war and the working class that fights it." Well, that was the truth, and it could not be tolerated. And he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. And that war against the poor, against mothers trying to raise families, against people of color, against immigrants, that war continues. And it's bipartisan. Democrats and Republicans, the parties of Bush and Gore, they collaborated in that shameful law that took away federal help for mothers living in poverty, trying to care for their families. They called it welfare reform, but it was a war against the poor, a war against children. Yeah. Democrats and Republicans collaborated in taking away food stamps from poor people, in punishing immigrant families and their children for not being born in this country. Democrats and Republicans joined to build more prisons. Yes, Gore and Lieberman and all the Republicans in Congress, they all voted, Democrats and Republicans, to extend the death penalty in the Crime Bill of 1996. Ooh. We have 2 million people in prison, as Phil Donahue pointed out, most of them poor and disproportionately people of color, and that is class war. Yeah. Both parties, all four candidates, Bush and Cheney, Gore and Lieberman, they all agree on spending a huge portion of our national wealth to prepare for war. They agree on maintaining an enormous military establishment, which means huge profits for the corporations that get the contracts. All four of them have supported the wars we have waged against Panama, Iraq, Yugoslavia. They've supported the sanctions that have killed hundreds of thousands of children in Iraq, the embargo that tries to strangle the people of Cuba, the bombings of the Sudan and Afghanistan and Yugoslavia, the standing by while children starve in Africa and AIDS spreads. Every month, 1 million children die in the world for lack of food and medicine, while these four candidates and their parties support this obscene military budget and more money for jet bombers and jet fighters and nuclear weapons. They have supported the class war against the poor here and in the rest of the world. And I cannot bear to pull a lever on election day in support of that. I'm for Ralph Nader and Winona LaDuke because someone in this campaign must speak the truth. Someone must say, ours is a country of enormous wealth, and we can use that wealth to guarantee to every American free medical care, decent housing, work at a living wage, child care, nurseries, clean air, clean water. It is a very rich country, and we can do all that. No child should be taught by underpaid teachers in dilapidated schools. I fully believe that if the American people were allowed to hear that message, if the parties of wealth did not control the media and control the debates and control the television airwaves, if the American people were really allowed to hear that message, our next president and vice president would be Ralph Nader and Winona LaDuke. When 90 or 100 million people, half the voting population, will not vote, how can it be called a democratic election? You see, and when the New York Times reporter went down to a little town in Florida and asked people why they weren't voting, and a woman working the cash register at a local filling station said, I don't think they think about people like us, and if they do care, they're not going to do anything for us. My life won't change. Well, Ralph Nader may not win, but he represents the American people and their deepest desires and needs in a way that neither Gore nor Bush can possibly match. Thank you. Whether Democrats or Republicans are in office, and we have a lot of historical experience that tells us this, corporations will dominate the country. The military-industrial establishment will be in power, the war against the poor will continue, and we will need a movement, a great national movement, to oppose that. And keep this in mind, if Bush is elected, Gore will fade away. If Gore is elected, Bush will disappear. He may be a mirage anyway. But Ralph Nader will still be here. Winona LaDuke will still be here. All of us will still be here. The Democrats and Republicans represent the past, the long history of war against the poor. Their apparent power, so fragile because it's held together by money and lies and violence, their power will fall, just as racial segregation fell, as the 12-hour day fell, as the subordination of women has begun to fall, as apartheid in South Africa fell. They all fell because people would not give up. The powerless organized became powerful. Minorities grow into majorities. We don't know when it will happen, but the day must come when there'll be justice for women, for people of color, for the poor of the world, when the stupidity of war will be recognized and military machines dismantled. Yeah. And someday, Someday the world will be made safe for children, and it is up to us to keep that hope alive, to keep democracy alive. Thank you. Lives on the White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota. She's a real live working mother. She's an author. She's Ms. Magazine's Feminist of the Year. She's Time Magazine named her one of the 50 most important people in America under the age of 40. She's an author, she's a Harvard grad, she's our next Vice President of the United States. She is Winona LaDuke. Right here.
It means hello, my relatives, in my language. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all for having the courage to stand up for all our future generations. Thank you all. I'm a mom of three. I'm concerned about the future of this country, and I'm running for Vice President of the United States. I had three heroes in American culture. One was Batman. I like the outfit. One was Spider-Man. I like the moves. And the third was Ralph Nader. That is a true story, because he is the people's superhero. And he is who, with all of us together, we will recover this democracy for our future generations. As I think of what to tell my children, you know, when I come out here, I said, I'm going off to recover democracy. They said, will you be home for lunch tomorrow? I said, I hope so. In my view, there are two things we must do ultimately in this new millennium. That is, reconcile our relationship with the earth. And reconcile our relationships with each other. We must make that peace. And we are the only ones who can do it. We are the predators on the food chain, and we are the predator country of the world. And we must make that reconciliation. Environmentally, you do not need a lecture. I was privileged to hear many of the people already talk here. We know what is going on unless we are in deep denial. We have problems. The Nader-LaDuke administration will purchase alternative energy. We will work the end of a cycle that combusts ourselves to oblivion. We will phase out nuclear power. We will end the squandering of our research and development money in the Department of Energy, 65% of which has been spent on nuclear and coal, and we will spend that on alternative energy. We will power our future. We will protect our oceans from that vast privatization of the Tysons and the CFS and the corporate world. Those oceans are for all of us, and not just for humans, they are for all the creatures who live there now. Today, as factory trawlers spend a third to a half of their catch and toss it off dead as a doornail back into the ocean as bycatch, we will begin that phase out of factory trawlers and return those fisheries to family fishers. We will have ecosystem-wide approaches and not market every single resource that is out there. I am a mother. A lot of my politics comes from parenting. So for instance, Halloween is coming up. In my household, we have a little rule, which is you may collect a lot of Halloween candy, but that does not mean you can eat it all. That is the way we will relate to our natural environment. Just because it is there does not mean we can mine it, we can dam it, we can take it. We will eat it. There are other relatives that have a right to live as well, and we will honor them. The Nader presidency will purchase chlorine-free, recycled, and hemp paper. I was arrested once. Very popular. I guess a lot of people were arrested. I chained myself to the front of a phone book factory because I don't believe 1,000-year-old trees should be turned into phone books. And I don't believe that we should have genetically engineered Terminator trees produced by Monsanto, Dow, and other corporations. We will consume less, and we will use that four-letter word widely, hemp. We are not afraid of industrial hemp because it is the crop of the future. 25,000 uses. As I understand, even the parachute used by George W. Bush's father to jump out of a plane was made of hemp. He should be a little less critical. We will continue conserving. I am proud, I must say, Clinton administration, this $12 billion in conservation fund to buy more land, we will keep increasing that. To put more land out of the hands of developers. And we will exercise the precautionary principle in the future. We will not take things off the shelf and out of the laboratory that we cannot pronounce. In other words, we will try to avoid the time which may be ahead when white men realize that their testicles are shrinking because of the contaminants in the environment and money flows like water to environmental protection. We will move ahead more rapidly than that. In our teachings as Anishinaabeg people, we are told that we are given some powers as humans to stand up, and we have responsibilities, not just rights, but responsibilities. And that is what we must exercise, those responsibilities to limit our behavior to honor our mother, the earth, because that is where we get our life. We will reconcile with each other. We will have the courage to do that. History was not made by invisible hands. It was made and crafted by the hands of our ancestors. We have a responsibility to reconcile that history in this country and in other countries. It is our responsibility to make right what is done wrong. And we will have the courage to do that. I have not yet asked Ralph, but I'm sure he will agree, because he is a very generous man, that any descendant of a slave who built the White House should stay in the Lincoln Room for free. I believe that Occidental Petroleum and other corporations can put themselves up at hotels elsewhere. We will have the courage to talk about justice, not charity, and reparations. That is something that this country must do, not only to Native people, but to African Americans and to other communities of color. Reparations for the historical disappropriation of wealth in this country, where some have got rich and others have got poor. And we will ensure that that injustice is rectified today by preserving and ensuring affirmative action, and by investing all that money that is squandered on those little special perks for corporations, that $125 to $250 billion we will procure from minority and people of color and women firms, and we will invest in poor communities. It is not charity, it is justice. Is to begin that process where we do no longer gate ourselves behind these increasing numbers of gated communities and send our children off to private school. But instead, we begin that process of rectifying the economic disequalities in this country, where 47 million American workers are working at below 10 bucks an hour. They cannot make ends meet, yet CEO salaries have gone up over 400% in the last decade. We must rectify that wealth, that disparity of wealth in this country, if we want real security over the long term. We will do that in government policies and in programs. We will transform the tax structure. I am really tired of hearing no more taxes. That's not what I would say. What I would say is that today, in the 1940s, you and I paid about 40% of the tax burden. 30% was paid by corporations. Today, you and I are paying 73% of the federal tax base. 15% is paid by corporations. We will transform that tax structure so corporations pay their fair share. I live in one of the poorest communities in the state of Minnesota. I live on the White Earth Reservation in northwestern Minnesota. My community has seen pretty much the back end of public policy for the last 100 years. I believe absolutely that public policy should not be written for the richest people in this country. It should be written for the poorest people. The rich are doing fine. We will begin that process of reconciliation between each other, and we will continue it into today. We will call for justice for Mumia. And we will say that President Clinton should declare clemency for Leonard Peltier. The longest standing clemency plea ever to stand in front of an American president. He has been for 7 years on Clinton's desk. And we will say, Bill, have a little courage. Give him clemency, it's about time. We will end the COINTELPRO era in America, and we will end the Indian Wars. And then we'll cast our eyes upon the military with a new view. My children last year went to school in trailers. And I know that there are a few trailers down there in the Pentagon. I know that their budget is immense. It is a third of the federal budget, and I know that it is 10 times what we spend on education in this country. So as I consider the future, I say, and I budget in my own household, which all of you know, it is hard to feed. I have 5 kids in that house. 3 are mine, 2 are others, pick up all kinds of strays. I know how to budget, and I will bring that expertise to Washington. To me and says, oh, we want that $17 billion for 10,000 nuclear weapons, I will say, what about hiring 425,000 new teachers with that money? When Dick Cheney's buddies come and say, want $11 billion for 2.5 Seawolf submarines, I will say, what about health insurance for 11 million kids? And when they come and say we want $7 billion for 25,000 U.S. troops in Germany, I will say, let us get Head Start to 1.7 million eligible but unserved kids. We will oppose violence in our schools, the military in our homes, and violence in our homes. And we will also call for and work towards a foreign policy which is demilitarized. Today, the United States is the single largest purveyor of small guns in the world. That is what 90% of the conflicts are fought with in the world today. They're fought with these small guns, if that's what you want to call it, M16. In World War I, 90% of the people killed were combatants. Today, 95% of the people killed are non-combatants. Those are women and children. We will not sell or give guns to countries with human rights violations. Here, we do not want them elsewhere. And we will tell countries like Israel and Colombia, who have far too many guns, to negotiate peace with others or peace at home, to talk peace, and we will cut their military budgets. For the future of this country. This is the richest country in the world. This is a country with no absence of the resources to do the right thing. What this country has had historically is an absence of political will. We are that political will. We will not be taken for granted anymore. And we will get out and vote. Miigwech. Thank you for your time.
He's a voice of the working man. He's Flint, Michigan's own. He's the son my mother wanted to have. His name is Michael Moore. Later. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Boston! Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. A number of the debates are here in Boston on Tuesday night. And two of the four major networks have decided not to carry the debate. So, for those of you who will be watching Dharma and Greg instead, I would like to now give you a short preview of what you will miss on Tuesday night. This is somewhat how it will go. Mr. Bush.
I support the death penalty.
Mr. Gore.
I support the death penalty.
I support NAFTA.
I support NAFTA.
I support the World Trade Organization.
I support the World Trade Organization.
I support an increase in the Pentagon budget.
I support an increase in the Pentagon budget.
I am not for universal health care right now. I am not for universal health care right now.
It's like back and forth. This is what it's going to be Tuesday night. All I'm hoping for,
and I think the appropriate thing is at the end of the debate that Al Gore go over and give George W. one of those big tipper tongue kisses, huh?
Yeah! I love you! I love you, man! No, I love you! I love you!
You know, it could just save us all this time and money between now and November 7th. Why don't we just, let's just elect both of them, and they could run the country, you know, like Gore can run it on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Bush can do it on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And on Sunday, Lieberman and Cheney can take over. You know, it won't matter, really. Thank you. According to the latest polls today, Ralph Nader is at 17% in the state of Alaska. He's at 11% in the state of Connecticut. Yeah. 8% in the state of Oregon. 7% in California. And according to the Zogby poll, he's at 5% nationwide. Now, this is what I think the crime is about leaving Ralph out of the debates. 5% of the American public. That's no chump change in a country that's got 275 million people. 5% of over 275 million is almost 14 million people.
14 million people want Ralph Nader to be president. Now, just so you get an idea, of how many 14 million people is, it is the combined total population of the following states: Alaska, Delaware, Hawaii, Idaho, Maine, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Dakota, South Dakota, Vermont, and Wyoming. Think about this. Can you imagine if you told the populations of those 14 states that their feelings and their desires and their candidate did not matter and would not be allowed to speak? If you told the people in 14 states that message, which is essentially what you're doing when you're telling the 5% of the country that Ralph can't speak, you'd have a revolt on your hands. And the people of America are so disgusted and dissatisfied with this election that the vast majority of them are planning not to vote. Over 100 million Americans will not go to the polls on November 7th. And I have to tell you something. I'm not going to vote for Ralph Nader because, you know, I want the Green Party to get the 5% so they can have federal funding, which I hope they get. I think that'd be a cool thing. But, you know, I'm not voting for Ralph because it makes me feel good or righteous or because he hangs out with Pearl Jam. Yeah. I'm voting for Ralph Nader because it's the right thing to do. I'm voting for Ralph Nader because he believes what I believe. And that's the only reason you should vote for someone for President of the United States. I'm voting for Ralph Nader because he has never lied to the American people. Can Bush and Gore and Cheney and Lieberman make the same claim? I'm voting for Ralph Nader because he has promised to end the drug war. Bush and Gore have promised only to end their own personal former drug use. I'm voting for Ralph Nader because he is the most qualified candidate. And that, again, is the only reason why you should vote for someone for electable office. Why is Ralph Nader the most qualified? Ralph Nader is responsible for more laws than Bush and Gore combined. I mean, is there anyone here right now that could stand up in this auditorium of 12,000 people and tell me one piece of legislation that Al Gore was responsible for in the U.S. Senate, other than voting for Scalia to be on the Supreme Court? Is there anyone here who can do that? That's right, there isn't one. A stunned audience of 12,000. Let me tell you what Ralph Nader has done in the last 35 years. Because of Ralph Nader, we have the Freedom of Information Act. We have the Safe Water Drinking Act. We have the EPA. We have OSHA. We have airbags. We have seatbelts. We have no smoking on the airlines. We have no overbooking on the airlines. We have radiation controls on our television sets. We have meat and poultry standards. Over and over and over again, the list goes on and on and on. He has made our life better and safer here in the United States. He is the most qualified person to be president. Ralph Nader is responsible. Ralph Nader is personally responsible for saving the lives of hundreds of thousands of people because of this legislation. How many lives has Al Gore saved? How many lives has George W. Bush saved? He's in the business of executing people, not saving their lives. Sitting like a coward behind the governor's desk in Texas, a multimillionaire son of a multimillionaire signed pieces of paper to execute the poor in the state of Texas. That's the kind of man he is.
but people say, but Mike, Ralph can't win. Ralph can't win.
Ralph can't win.
You know, now, I didn't go to college, but is there like anybody from MIT here or like one of the, you know, like really smart, you know? Okay, Emerson too. Just help me out. Help me out here. Is there a certain law of physics that I missed that says Ralph can't win? Is that written anywhere? Is it a mathematical problem I haven't been able to figure out? I mean, if Bush gets 33% and Gore gets 33% and Ralph gets 34%, who wins? So he can, I mean, he can win, right? Statistically, scientifically possible, right? Who started this rumor? Does anybody know the guy who started this rumor that Ralph can't win? Is he here? Is it any of these people down here with their cameras and their microphones? You didn't start this rumor, did you? Ralph can't win. That's not true. There's really smart students here who can prove he can win. I mean, there's some things that Ralph can't do. He can't lift the Fleet Center with his two bare hands. We'll all agree on that, right? He can't help the Boston Red Sox get to the World Series, right? He can't do that. I mean, one guy. The great designated hitter, but he can't bring, Ralph, you can say that. Ralph can't win the World Series for the Red Sox. You can make that statement. But you can't say that Ralph can't win this election. You know, 225 years ago, a bunch of revolutionaries right here in this city, I'm sure a lot of people back then told them, hey, you can't win. They got a king and an army, and they're bigger and stronger than us. You can't win. And I think only about 25% of the people actually believed they could win. The other 75% said, you can't win. When Rosa Parks took her seat at the front of the bus, what if she had thought, I can't win, there's only one of me? Any great change that has occurred in our history, from all of our great leaders, has occurred because they believed that they could win and they would listen to no one else who said that they couldn't win. Change only occurs when you have the courage of your convictions. We are turning into the United States of America Incorporated, brought to you by McDonald's, General Electric, and Nike. We have turned our country over to a group of corporate criminals, none of which have spent a single day behind bars. But people say, I don't want to waste my vote. I don't want to waste my vote. It's a wasted vote if I vote for Ralph. It's a wasted vote if you vote for more of the same, which is what you're going to get with Gore or with Bush. Now, let me tell you something. We all know, and I think can collectively agree, the nightmare that George W. Bush would bring us if he became president of the United States. But let me say this to the good Democrats of Massachusetts. Let us take a look at the nightmare we've gone through during the last 8 years of Clinton Gore. Let's not forget the facts. The record speaks for itself. Under Reagan Bush, we had 37 million Americans who had no health care. Under Clinton Gore, we have 45 million Americans with no health care. Under Reagan Bush, we had 1 million of our citizens in prison. Under Clinton Gore, we now have over 2 million of our citizens in prison. One out of every 70 adult men is behind bars. 20% of African American men have had their voting rights stripped from them under Clinton Gore. Clinton Gore. And nearly half of those in prison are there because they participated in an activity that both Gore and Bush have admitted to doing themselves. This is not a wasted vote. You know, on Mount Rushmore, we have chiseled in stone the heads of the four presidents that most Americans admire the most: Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt. Yet none of these four individuals believed in the two-party system. Isn't this amazing? Think about this. Abraham Lincoln won as a third-party candidate in 1860, the first Republican to run for office as president, a third-party candidate, and he won. Thomas Jefferson won in a very close three-way race when he won for president back in the early 1800s. George Washington didn't even believe in parties and belonged to no party when he won as our first president. And Theodore Roosevelt became so disgusted with the two-party system, he formed the Progressive Party, and when he ran as that presidential candidate, he came in second, beating the Republican William Howard Taft. That's the history of Mount Rushmore. The revered presidents on Mount Rushmore, these are the men we admire, and yet we don't aspire to that ourselves? A man came up to Ralph and said, "But Mr. Nader, I want to vote for you, but I can't. I've got to stop Bush." And Ralph said, "When you send your congressman or woman to Washington, D.C., you expect him or her to vote their conscience?" And the man said, "Yes, I do." And Ralph said, "Well, why do you expect less of yourself?" In closing, I want to talk specifically to the young people here today.
Yeah!
Many of you will be voting for the first time in your lives.
Yeah.
You are being told that you have to settle for less. You are being asked to compromise your conscience. You're being asked to do what you don't think is right because of some strategic chess move to block someone else from getting into office. Let me say this to you folks. Please, listen to this, because I mean this as a guy who's a bit older than you now. If you begin your adult life chipping away at your own conscience, settling for less, not going with your dreams and your aspirations, but voting from your fears, you are going to start down a slippery slope for the rest of your lives. Throughout your life, in whatever job that you get, in the relationships that you have, you'll find yourself rationalizing your decisions, making up excuses why you're doing not what your conscience says to do, but what somebody else thinks you should be doing, and turning your head the other way. And the more you do that, the worse the society gets. It really is up to you. You have to understand that your parents, who voted for George McGovern in 1972, ended up learning a very bad lesson, which is, I think we have to settle for less. And settling for less got us Carter, which led to Reagan and Bush, because they saw how weak we were, because we were willing to settle for less. And that led to Clinton and Gore. And the gene pool, the political gene pool, just keeps getting depleted more and more and more, so that we no longer have a Thomas Jefferson, but we have a Joseph Lieberman, who is at the behest of the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies. That's what we'll have after Gore. Young people, do not allow this to happen. Get involved. On the seats here today, there are these volunteer cards. Fill these things out. Put your email address on here. Get involved. You don't have to do a lot. Slackers can change this country. No, seriously. You don't have to sit at the Greenpeace table at Harvard Square 24 hours a day to change the world. Just an hour or two a week Go back to watching TV and eating Doritos and drinking beer. Just give us a couple hours a week. Can you do that? Just a couple hours a week. Will you do something else for me? When you leave here today, will you go home and will you phone two people and tell them you were here today? Tell them the facts you heard and tell them to vote for Ralph Nader. Will you do that? Who will do this? Who will do this? Two phone calls, two emails. I want to see who's going to do this. Who's going to do this? We can do this. We can change this country. Don't vote your fears, vote your dreams and your aspirations. Please do this for me. And please, now, let's give a big Boston welcome to a man who will tell you the truth, Ralph Nader.